Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Katie Britton. There's a battle going on, and it's taking place both above and below ground. In Anne Aguirre's book, Enclave, Deuce and Fade are forced topside after they're banished from their underground community. But times have changed. What was once a bustling, technologically advanced city has turned into a disaster zone and forced survivors underground. No one knows if it's viable topside, and we soon find out not all of the information has been disclosed. I recently spoke with Aguirre about the book and how its inspiration came from a fairy tale from the 1800s.
I was looking through some Victorian fairy tales, or parables maybe you would call them, and some of them are very obscure. And I already had the concept in mind that it would be an underground society based in fallacious and incorrect information, and the elders keep control of the populace by disseminating this false information. And as I was reading through those fairy tales, I came across The Day Boy and the Night Girl, and I thought, you know, this would absolutely be a perfect parallel for the story I want to tell. So then I decided I would incorporate it.
It's really interesting, and I don't want to move too far ahead, but how you have incorporated it into the story. And at first, you open with a quote from it, and then slowly it appears within the novel.
You know, the interesting thing about the appearance of that particular book, there is an exact book as I describe it, because I found it on an auction site. So the inscription and everything, I mean, there is a real object in the world that correlates with the books that I mentioned that they found. Isn't that kind of cool?
It is. I love how you have a real history weaved in with the humans in the novel's history.
Someone actually questioned that, and they were like, it's not possible for a library book to have an inscription. And actually, that's false, because some library books have been donated from private collections. And they do end up in circulation occasionally.
So I want to talk about this underground world, and it's the Enclave. When we first start reading, I had no idea where the book was set. You gather that they are in an abandoned subway, but you're not really sure what city it's in at first.
In fact, that was an intentional mystery. One of the blurbs that was written early on actually spoils that, and it got published on the net, and I was really disappointed about that, because I wanted the readers, when they get to the part where it's revealed, and there are some statues, I think, that are fairly distinctive.
There are, and then
they go to the library.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, and that was the moment that I wanted all the readers to be totally sure, like 100% sure. They might have suspicions by that point, but I wanted that to be the moment of kind of like, oh wow, confirmation. And so I'm really glad to hear that you weren't positive where it was, and that you didn't encounter spoilers prior.
Well, I had to go back and look, and I'm thinking, I can't believe I don't know what city this is. What did I miss?
Well, the names of the two, the two stations that I mentioned are actually subway stops.
Yes.
The College Enclave and the Nassau.
That's why I thought, I was like, oh, okay, now I know where this is. I was thinking, but then I was like, maybe it's in a different country. Oh, boy. Well, these underground, so we have the enclaves, and you said that there are different townships, and that there is a hierarchy. And aside from the elders, and being old really isn't that old when they live underground.
Yeah, it's really true. There is definitely a hierarchy. The hunters probably get the most respect because they're the most proactive in the defense and providing meat for the settlement. The elders get respect due to their age and the prestige of attaining that rank. Builders are probably next, because they provide things that everyone needs. And breeders, I think, are kind of, they're looked down on. They couldn't fulfill any of the other roles. So they're used for keeping the population up and for minding the young, but I don't think that anyone really respects them too much.
I feel that once you come full circle, you have your highly technological societies, and then the, I don't want to say end of the world happens, but something tragic happens to the population, how you revert back into the old ways and having the hunters, builders, and breeders and broken up into those classes.
Well, I think that specialization of work is a natural human tendency, mm-hmm. that if you're living in an enclave like this one, that it makes sense to assign roles in that way. It's tribal, in a sense.
Mm.
It reverts back to the old hunter-gatherer.
And tribal, in the sense, they can tell what group they belong to by the scars on their arms.
Yeah, I did want to invoke a sense of ritual, because I think that rituals are important to human beings. They have passages that need to be celebrated, and it's kind of a binding, in a sense, if you share a cultural context, even if it's self-invented. If you look at gangs, they have initiation rituals. They have colors that they wear that mark them as belonging to the same demographic. You know, there are different tribes that actually do have ritual scarring that denotes membership. So I tried to extrapolate from all of those anthropological precedents to try and create my own original premise.
And we have our characters, and it's interesting how they are not given names until they reach a certain age, because many of what they call are brats, all the children are brats, don't survive.
Yeah, there are a couple of interesting points in that regard. First, there is a historical precedent for that. If you look at really old gravestones, sometimes it just says Baby Johnson, and that's because they didn't name a child until it was older, and it seemed more likely that it would survive childhood ailments and infant mortality. And it was the same in the American frontier as well. That's about the most modern precedent that I can reference in that regard. But on the American frontier, they often would just call someone baby or junior or something along those lines until the age of 5 or later, occasionally. I have an antecedent, actually, whose name was Guy, and it wasn't because that was what he was named. That was just what they called him, and it just sort of stuck. He was never named, and Guy was pretty much always his name. He's deceased now, but he was born in like 1899.
Interesting.
And he lived to be 50 or so. So he had already passed away by the time I was born, but his name was Guy his whole life.
The names of our characters, Deuce and Fade, they were named at the naming ceremony.
Correct.
Which, they're very unusual names.
Yeah, I had the names in my head and I had the stories from the very beginning. I've taken a little flack because apparently Deuce is a unpleasant slang. It's not slang that I've ever used, so I wasn't actually familiar with that. When I chose that name, I was only thinking of the cards, because I know that's what you call a two.
Right.
And her card was a two of spades. And Fade's name actually comes from a care instruction label on an old bottle of detergent.
And not everybody can read well because they are underground and they have their specific duties. So there are just bits of letters of things from the past. So Fade showed up, but of course, if it's a laundry detergent, will not fade.
Right. Colors will not fade. It was from the care label. I assume it was probably Cheer. Because that's one that claims to be color safe.
Now, you're talking about how you've had these ideas on how they got named, and this is part of a trilogy. And at what point do you know as you're writing that the story isn't going to be a standalone novel, or was it planned?
I don't generally know that until I've gotten a little bit further in. I finished the first book, and I knew that the first book wasn't the end of it. But I wasn't sure if it was a duology or if it was a trilogy until I started writing the second one. And after I started writing the second one, then the whole entire story arc kind of unlocked in my head. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I wrote the synopsis for the third book, and I knew how it ended, and I know exactly how it ends. I know the story, and that was when I was sure. I was about halfway through the second book when I knew.
I know we started our conversation about the Day Boy and the Night Girl, and Deuce has been born underground in the Enclaves, and Fade, there are rumors that he comes from Topside,
right,
which obviously would be the rest of the world that isn't within all of these tunnels. So you have a play there that draws throughout the story, but there's rumors that you can't live upside. It's been completely poisoned, and that the people from the underground would not be able to survive up top.
Right. And I think that the general consensus, at least until after she learns about the Elder's duplicity, they all think that Fade is a liar, that he comes from one of the other enclaves, and he doesn't want to admit it, because if he's been banished from another enclave for committing a crime, if he admits to that and then they send a runner to confirm his identity, then he will be executed for the crime committed in the other enclave. So when he claims that he comes from Topside, everyone just assumes that it's a lie, because their entire belief system is crafted on the idea that you can't survive outside.
And yet it is very dangerous to live down there because of the freaks.
Correct.
Which are the most beastly described things in the entire world. And there is a creepy hand on the back of the book, too, where it's just like, oh, okay, we'll keep that side down on the table.
Oh, well, I'm glad that they came across as terrifying, because they are definitely supposed to be terrifying. They're supposed to be symbolic of the horrors that mankind has inflicted through unethical applications of science.
Deuce and Fade are hunters, and so when they are sent out, they obviously need to protect their particular enclave college from the freaks, but as well as go out and get the meat. So they realize when they are on a mission to one of the other enclaves that the freaks are changing and they are smarter than previously thought.
Yes, they are among the first to notice this. I really can't say more about that, because that would be spoilers. I mean, there is obviously a reason for it, and some of that will be revealed in Outpost, and the full spectrum reveal will come in Horde, which is book 3.
So seeing that there's something a little bit different from these, and also, with all the rumors about what is actually happening topside, Deuce is obviously a very strong female character. We understand that not only because she is a hunter and a spectacular one at that, but she's a very strong character. And I really like how she doesn't step down from her beliefs, and she doesn't use it as an excuse if she gets struck by one, but she's always looking to make herself better.
I did definitely want Deuce to be a strong role model for teenage girls. I wanted them to see her perseverance, her desire to improve herself, her loyalty to her friends, because she makes a particular choice that is pretty horrible for her in terms of the outcome, but she does it to protect Stone, one of her best friends.
It's also interesting how Fade affects her in the sense that she starts to have different feelings aside from just knowing that being a hunter is her identity.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating to write about her emotional awakening, because frankly, she was raised in a society where absolutely no impact was placed upon emotional resonance or physical contact. The only physical contact she's ever had really has been training. You know, learning to fight, something that will make her stronger, that will make her more efficient at repelling the freaks. And suddenly she's partnered with someone who makes her think different things and makes her feel different things. And I think it's really natural that she would struggle with that and probably feel some guilt and shame, like she's showing weakness to experience these things, because really she has no other context for it.
Well, we can find out more about Fade and Deuce's adventures. The name of the book is Enclave, and it is the first in the trilogy. Anne, thank you so much for joining us today.
It was a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for having me.
Again, the name of Anne Aguirre's book is Enclave, the first in the trilogy. It is published by Fywell & Friends. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.